Hello there, fellow peregrinos. My name's Bradley Chermsard. I'm a two-time pilgrim. I have walked the Camino Portugués, I've walked the Camino Francés, and I'm also the author of the international best-selling Camino de Santiago memoir, The Only Way is West. I'm also the host of the Camino de Santiago Pilgrims podcast. So, if you're ready for this week's episode, go grab your boots and let's go Camino! Hello there, once again, fellow peregrinos. Welcome to El Camino de Santiago, Pilgrims Podcast, where we talk about planning, preparation, and packing for walking the road to Santiago, as well as tips, tricks, hacks, and stories to make your journey along the way a lot more enjoyable, memorable, and unforgettable. So, to that end, with that mission in mind, we have with us this week an American pilgrim who is from Indiana in the USA, currently in Atlanta, Georgia. Did you like my American accent there? Atlanta, Georgia. That was terrible, wasn't it? I got to work on that one.
Okay.
No, it was bad. Oh, no, it was bad. So, Joseph Cronin, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Now, Joseph, I normally give the kind of pilgrim biog, but feel free to tell us the Camino you walked last year in 2019.
Yeah, so I did the Camino Portugués from the coastal route from Porto to Santiago.
Now, of all the Caminos you could have chosen, you could have chosen the Via de la Plata, you could have chosen the Camino Inglés, you could have chosen the Frances, you could have chosen the Camino del Norte, but you chose the Camino Portugués coastal route. The big question is, why?
It's actually pretty funny. It was chosen for me. Actually, last year I ended my year of traveling on the Camino, and so it was planned for me for over a year. I traveled to four continents, all in all over 17 countries in 11 months last year, and I ended in Paris after I did the Camino.
Sorry, how many countries was that?
I ended with 17 countries.
17 countries. Okay, right. So a year traveling the world, four continents. What were they?
So I went to South America. I went to Colombia, Ecuador, and Peru. And then over in Asia, I went to India and Nepal. And then we jumped to Africa. I went to Rwanda, Uganda, Kenya, Ethiopia. And then we moved over to Europe. And I stayed a month in Romania, Portugal, Spain, and I finished in Paris.
Wow, what an epic trip.
Yeah, it was a trip of a lifetime. My dream was to travel the world at 15, and I did it by 30.
Brilliant. Okay, so four continents, 17 countries. You end up on the Camino Portugués. What was the initial – was it because it was that boyhood dream that you decided to do this kind of these intrepid travels?
No. So I actually – it was an 11-month mission trip. So it was all religious purposes for me last year. Went and volunteered with – different ministries in each of these countries. And, you know, we just served alongside people. I grew a lot in my faith, and the Camino was chosen on purpose. I didn't have any idea what the Camino was. Even in Porto, when I was starting at the cathedral, I still didn't really have any real clue on why the Camino was so popular. But it was chosen for us by our squad mentor. I traveled with a group of 40 people last year and did this. So
it was like an ultimate exercise in character building to end the trip.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That was that. Well, I think the whole point was, like, you know, to reflect back on the year, to kind of decompress, and also to just, you know, think about, like, all that God had brought us through over the course of those 11 months.
And I guess that thinking time on the road was a great place to do that and process it all.
Oh yeah. Oh, it was absolutely amazing. The Camino was very personal to me, and I didn't even understand it, you know, until I started walking it. It was just such a beautiful experience, as far as just being able to, like, you know, let it all go and really just kind of embrace, well, community, the people you follow along the way with, and also just kind of, you know, just reflect on all that we just did for the whole year. It was so beautiful.
Yeah. Sounds like a great way to crown an unforgettable year in your life.
Yeah, it was amazing. I was, I am obsessed with the Camino now. Ask any of my friends.
Join the club, my friend.
Yeah. That's why I reached out and I was excited to do this.
Well, I'm really grateful you did that because without guests like yourself, Joseph, there is no podcast. People get bored listening to me every week. So we need new characters just like yourself, Joseph. So when you eventually do get to the... Put yourself back in that place now that you've just walked from Porto to Santiago. You said in our pre-interview chat it took you 19 days. And the question they ask you is, I think we already know the answer. And I think I'm assuming your answer was that you said it was religious motives.
Yeah, that absolutely.
That you did it for. And you said that it deepened your faith. It deepened your faith. Was that the pilgrimage itself to Santiago the whole year, or the pilgrimage was like the perfect way to finish that personal journey in your own faith?
Yeah, I would say it's a combination of both. Mm-hmm. You know, I felt so stretched. I mean, last year, you know, I got back to the States and, you know, started work and everybody's like, how was your vacation? And I'm like, it really wasn't a vacation. It was actually some of the most challenging things I've ever done in my life, you know, being stretched, you know, at one point where we were living and doing ministry in a garbage dump. You know, we lived off the coast in India, you know, in villages and in, you know, rural parts of Kenya. And it was just so challenging. And it just felt like, you know, I didn't have that period where I could, like, you know, really just decompress. And I just felt stretched all year long. And the Camino just brought an immediate release from all that stress and really allowed me to look at it from a vantage point that was healthy. You know, it's a challenge to, you know, we spent about a month in each of these countries, and it was a challenge. You know, the travel days, getting from Lima, Peru to Hyderabad, India takes 5 days, and you have to go across a lot of time zones. And you know, just to get to the end of Europe and do the Camino for me was, it really helped me understand all that God was doing throughout the year and all that he brought me through. And it was just a perfect, perfect way to, I think I grew in both aspects during the year, and the Camino especially, I learned a lot about myself.
As a person and as with your faith as well, as a Christian.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Like evangelism was really important for me on the Camino. I did it with two of the guys I did the race with. It's called the World Race. And two of the guys I did it with, and, you know, it was just amazing. My team lead, and then as well as one of my friends that had been on my team the whole year, we did it together.
I'm intrigued because myself personally, I would classify myself as a non-religious pilgrim. That doesn't mean I don't believe in a supreme energy, in a pure energy, in a divine energy. I do believe that there is something divine out there. And I myself have been through various, in fact, someone who's got a faith as strong as yours, I envy it in many ways because I, in some ways, I wish I had it. I wish I felt that pull towards one faith. My wife, for example, she's a Catholic. She goes to church. I go with her sometimes. And I'm wondering how you could advise maybe non-religious and religious pilgrims, any practices, rituals, exercises, thought processes, besides prayer, which I guess is one obvious one, any perspective, any ways of looking at things to deepen your faith, anything that that served you along the way that enabled you to do that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a complicated question. That's a phenomenal question.
Because there will be, I mean, I can't remember the percentage, but there are more religious pilgrims than there are non-religious pilgrims.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Which is
that's
not a surprise because it's a Christian pilgrimage.
Exactly, that was the
so
whole point of it.
So I envy the people that have that call to faith, that devotion, that discipline. I really, really, really envy it myself. And I've been to church. I've been looking for that pull, but I haven't felt it personally. And
so
I've, yeah, tell me
so
about
I
it.
Would, I all right. I'll just tell you a little story. I was doing a safari in Kenya, and I tried. Just bear with me. I was doing a safari, and I had one of our guides. His name was Barack, and he was asking very similar questions with what you just asked. And you know, my encouragement to him through that was that, you know, faith is never forced on anybody. You know, you can't just walk into the knowledge of who God is. Just you have to have an encounter with Him. And I truly believe that when our hearts are in a good place, the Camino is a perfect way for that. And you know, I told Barack in Kenya, I said, you got to have an encounter with God and to pray about what that might look like. I've had a lot of people say, well, I don't even want to pray because what am I really praying to? And, you know, I've just discovered that God, He's listening and He's always looking for hearts that are receptive. And I think more importantly, that there be a yes in our spirit for something that we might not understand. And the Camino is perfect for that. Like that's the whole concept. Like I didn't understand going into the Camino at all what it was, but yet I experienced the magic of it. And again, you ask any of my friends, I have strong faith. I'm a firm believer. You know, I even prayed into this podcast with you with a friend of mine today, even before I did it. And I just love the opportunity it affords. And so, you know, my encouragement to you is to, and especially to people that are along the way or maybe, you know, struggling in their faith is to be dependent, like, you know, in your faith, like what is your faith and to turn prayer, you know, it seems obvious, but it's literally the most important aspect of our walk. And as a Christian, you know, it's my lifeline. Every day, that's, you know, and it gets me through. Like, I can't tell you how many,
isn't it? It's your connection to that energy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I can't tell you how many hours of prayer I spent on the Camino, especially the 3 days that I had to walk alone. You know, and so yeah, you just dependency and also willingness to experience something. That you're not expecting, you know. Mm. A lot of people, you know, I believe in Christ. You know, that's just my faith. I don't ever like to force Christ on anybody. Christ isn't something that you just go and you just speak at people. You experience like the virtues and you experience the forgiveness and you know, that was the whole point of last year for me was to do that. And keeping it tied in with the Camino, you know, getting into Santiago and reaching that cathedral and just realizing like, you know, how much he really brought me through and how even, you know, the coastal route of the Camino is, it's honestly not that long, you know, I did 215 miles roughly, but that's not even half of the Camino Francés or Del Norte or, gosh, what's the one that starts in southern Spain that goes, that's like 1,000 kilometers or something crazy like that. So I thought it was long doing that, but you know, just seeing all that happen just showed me like I was definitely in the right place.
Yeah. Compared to what you'd been through prior to that and having your comfort zone shrunk to what it had been on your travels and through your mission, you know, the Camino was maybe for you a bit more of a luxury.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes. You know, so
let's talk about the coastal route, because actually it's a privilege to have you on, because we haven't had many pilgrims on this podcast that have walked the coastal routes.
Yeah.
So how did you find the terrain? Like, was it hard going, ups and downs?
So I'd say that probably the hardest part was, coming out of, you know, about 3 days in, off the coast in Portugal, everything's cobblestone. So it's just extremely tough on your feet. And
it's
so that was
tiring,
a real challenge.
Isn't it, walking on the cobblestone?
Oh, yeah. Like,
it's a bit like walking on sand.
Yeah, I was like, this is so beautiful. And then my feet's like, no, this isn't that pretty. So yeah, I would say the hardest part is not really the terrain so much. Now, if you deviate and you do the central way is a lot more hilly and mountainous at some points. But I stayed like I walked down the river through Porto, and I stayed on the coast all the way up to Padrón, where we then deviated and walked to Santiago. But yeah, the
Wow,
train
so
was fine.
you walked the coastal route. I didn't know this. It goes all the way from Porto out to Padrón.
Yes, yeah, and then there's
Wow.
a spiritual variant as well that so there's that split. There's a split from at Redondela that I think that's how you pronounce it. You'll have to excuse me. I'm
No,
not
that's
like
perfect. That's perfect. Redondela, yeah.
so and that goes up, continues down the central, but then once you get into the day's walk after Redondela into Pontevedra, it deviates. Instead of going right at the T, you go left, and there's a spiritual variant for 2 days that you can walk through mountains. And then I can't remember the name of the town that we stopped in before we took the boat up river to Padrón.
Okay, tell us about the boat up river and why that's significant. Because I know the story, but maybe many pilgrims don't.
Yeah, I mean, it for us, it was just they were just showing us a lot of the spiritual significance for what going up river to Padrón was. And I thought it was fascinating because they stopped at different sites, different historical sites. Now I did my Camino. It was, I think we only had like 2 days where it wasn't raining, and that was not one of them, the river experience. When we got into Padrón, it was pouring down rain.
What time
So
of the
we
year
just
was this, Joseph?
So I started my Camino on October the 24th, and I finished November the 11th.
Wow, so you had non-stop rain the whole time.
But oh my gosh, I was living my best life, but man, was
That's some
there were
lousy luck.
yeah, there was some day like we had probably only had maybe two or three at the most of sunny days, and I think that was coming right out of Porto. The first couple of days were really nice, but especially once you got into Galicia, it was raining all the time,
Yeah,
pretty
Galicia
much.
is known for rain. But I mean, I've been really lucky on my Caminos. I've experienced rain, but only kind of isolated days here and there. But I've never had that much rain on my Caminos. So yeah, you're quite unlucky. So the spiritual significance of that journey on the boat?
On the boat, well, it was really about seeing the historical sites because people would also back in, I don't know, it didn't directly correlate to the way the Camino first started, but people created over time spiritual significance of, and plus maybe some tourism type deal as well.
Yeah, so
I think that might be
they
a
believe that the St. James disciples carried his body up that river, don't they, to that church at
That's
the,
yep. That's what they were. That's what and stopping point actually in Padrón.
yeah, and they
I got
stopped in
it.
Padrón, and that's why that city, that town's quite significant.
So I actually went to the church. You can get a Compostela there as well, and I got one.
Right, and did you
So
eat the
yeah,
Padrón peppers?
I did not. Nope, I did not. I did see somebody do it, and I didn't partake in
They
that.
say 1 in 20 is the spicy one, so you've got to be careful. But
Yeah, I love spicy food, don't get me wrong, but my belly had been through a lot last year, so I was just trying to keep it safe, you
yeah,
know.
you'd have been in India, right? So you might have it. We call it, I don't know if you get it, if you've heard of it, we call it a case of Delhi belly.
Oh my gosh, I definitely have heard of that, and I've definitely been through
Right,
that.
okay.
I got water poisoning, it's not fun. So
Okay, so let's get into a few practical things. So, as well as your clothes, backpack, shoes, and phone, you can only take one other thing with you if you were to go again. What would it be? One other thing, Joseph. Put you on the spot.
yeah, I would definitely. I mean, it's a toss up between a personal item like something like a comfort item like a pillow or trekking poles. Definitely, I had trekking poles, but it's something that I know I flat out would not do the Camino without again.
How would you manage taking a pillow? That wouldn't be very practical in terms of carrying it, or you got some kind
It
of special pillow?
Nope. I actually, so I lived out of a Osprey pack all last year. So I had my comfort pillow with me all year from home. So I just stuffed it right in my pack. No, it's definitely not practical. Definitely to the listeners, if you can do without like all the weight, just get down to like maybe 10 pounds if you can do that. That's what I'm doing for my next Camino. I'm not going to bring anything. I think trekking poles would be my luxury item.
Okay, an inflatable pillow could be a good idea
Yeah,
as
yeah.
well.
Yep. There's Aereo through Sea to Summit. That's really good inflatable pillows.
So yours will be an Osprey backpack. Okay, so you'd take with you your hiking trekking poles. I'm gonna have to learn those, I've never used them before, so I'm gonna have to get
Oh, they're
some and learn them.
well, I've heard through some of your podcasts that you have a knee problem.
Yeah, well, it's getting better. It's actually got, I was told to have surgery. In the end, I refused it, and I've been taking the long road, and it's actually like miles better. I couldn't even get up. I went from running like 10 Ks, 15 Ks. Well, I was walking 20 K 1 week. The next thing, I couldn't get up a set of stairs. It was very debilitating, quite upsetting. But anyway, long
Well,
story short, it's getting better.
trekking poles on your next Camino, whenever that is, will, I mean, it takes probably 30% of the stress off your knees, I'd
Yeah, well,
say.
I'm definitely gonna use them for that reason, and yeah, I'm definitely gonna have to learn that to make life a lot easier for myself. So I'm just look, I have a problem with conversions here because in England we do things in stones and pounds, and in I've been living in Spain for quite a few years, and we do it in kilograms over there. So I just had a quick conversion. So 10 pounds, you got it. 4 kilograms. You had 4 kilograms on your back. That's impressive.
Oh no. I did not. I had how much is 45 pounds into kilograms? LBs. 2 kilograms. No, I had about 20 kilograms
You
kilograms, and
carried
that
20
was
kilograms on your back on the Camino.
yeah. Oh gosh.
How are you
Oh, it was
still
the
walking,
worst.
Joseph?
It was I by the grace of God, it was I mean I have stories from the Camino that it's just such a bad idea to carry huge amounts of weight. Oh my
Yeah,
gosh.
no wonder. Well, you got a pillow in there. Surprised you never did that. Sounds like you had your
Yeah.
mattress as well.
Yes, I did have a sleeping pad, and I also had 5 pounds of international coins that I had collected throughout the year that I was paranoid about losing. So I carried a bunch of really, really unnecessary things.
Right, so for your next Camino, you're going to obviously take a bit less, right?
Oh yeah, like three pairs of like a, 2 pairs of shorts, pair of convertible pants. 3 shirts, 3 pairs of underwear, some shoes, sandals, and a little bit of medical stuff, and that's it.
All right, so give us the name of your favorite alberg on the Camino, or hotel or hostel where you stayed and why.
I would have to. Okay, so I'm not good at remembering. There's two. There's one in Aguardia, and I don't know if you went. That's along the coastal route. I don't think the central way, but that's the municipal. That was 5 euros. It was such a wonderful Camino experience with people.
The
Like you get a
facilities are really good in Portugal, aren't they?
yeah the
And
in
very, very
Portugal,
economical.
yeah. I mean, so this was just across the river in Spain. So this was
Right,
like
okay.
literally right across the way. But even that one was amazing. I mean, just the camaraderie, the people showing up, the different walks of life. I'd have to say by far though, my favorite one was when I took 3 days, me and my friend took 3 days off because he had hurt his heel. And so he was resting, and it was in, I believe it's pronounced Sions, and it's also the municipal albergue there. So, and it was so amazing because it was towards the end of the season for the coastal route. So it wasn't busy. And so the people that ran it, they let us stay there for, 10 euro a day for 3 days, and we basically had, after the first night, the entire albergue to ourselves. It
And what's
was
that place called?
really, I'd have to, I'll look it up, and by the end of the podcast, I'll give you the name of that because it is, and it's also one of the most beautiful hostels I stayed at along the way, because it was atop of a, like it overlooked the ocean from atop of a little mountain. into the Atlantic. It was so beautiful.
You have to look that up for us, because I think the listeners would really appreciate it. And you're kind of selling the coastal route to me as well. So I'm thinking, maybe that'll be my next one. But
I mean, it's a perfect route, especially for you. Just get your feet wet again, and with also coming out of that injury, it'd be perfect, because you know it doesn't. It's not like 500 miles or anything like that, and you can take your time.
We want to try and get a month one in. My wife and I, she's never done a month long Camino, so we want to get a month one in. So I think that'll be a good shout. So I'm definitely interested in this route, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners are. One thing I'm intrigued about, that coastal route, especially, I know, is notorious for wind. Was it really, really windy? Was it battered by the wind?
Yeah, well, especially coming off the Atlantic, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't all the time, but, you know, even on the sunny days, you just constant wind. It was a welcome relief, because, you know, when you're wearing a bunch, like, you know, I was having to wear a poncho, I was having every day, and like a raincoat underneath that, some pants, and it was nice to get the breeze to cool me down.
Right. Okay. So that's just one thing to be aware of, that, you know, you could have a few days battling the wind on the coastal route.
Yes, exactly. But it's totally worth it. I am planning my next Camino to do the Del Norte, simply because I just became obsessed with just the beauty of the coast in Spain. It was just absolutely wonderful.
It's very rugged, isn't it?
Yeah. Especially as you get into Spain, it was pretty rugged.
Okay, so let's talk about one of your hardest moments on the Camino. Actually, let's go to your. I mean, obviously, you'd had a challenging year, and what you previously thought was your comfort zone was just shrunk. And the Camino is also a place where that comfort zone just gets shrunk to a backpack and a mattress for the night and your comfort pillow. So tell us about what was your lowest moment on the Camino, how you got through it, and what's the takeaway for yourself and others, should they be in a similar position?
Yeah. I would say, you know, I had two really low points. The first was day two. You know, going into, I carried, you know, almost 21 kilograms of stuff. And, you know, and going into day two, like when I showed up at the end of day one into I think it's pronounced Villa de Conde. And I couldn't even lift my pack off of my back. And, you know, I had felt so physically exhausted from carrying all that weight all day. And I was like, how can I continue this the entire time? And so, you know, I was with friends. We just made some dinner together. We ate. And then in the morning, you know, I felt great and I wanted to start again. But at the end of day two, I had blisters underneath my toenails on both of my toes and like my pinky toes as well. And it was just so painful. The last 8 kilometers or so walking in on day two was incredibly painful. And I didn't think I was going to be able to withstand this. So, you know, one thing that I believe, like, you know, coming into the Camino was I knew that I was to walk the entire thing. I knew I was to complete it without taking a taxi, or a bus, that this is something that I felt like God really wanted me to persevere through. And so immediately I was met with challenges and like what, you know, I had to make decisions. And so day two was really hard. But I found different, the people, and this, you know, this goes into the very last question, but you know, people and how the Camino provides, I friggin' ran across these Hawaiians that knew exactly what I was going through. They had exactly what I needed to help with the blisters as well as to cover up the blisters so as not to make them any worse. And like, I learned how to take care of my feet from then on. You know, now
what did they tell you exactly?
Well, I mean, to keep a a clothespin, not a clothespin, but like a what do you call those things? Like a little needle, I guess, to pop the blister on the outside of it and then drain it and then cover it for the day with like moleskin or something that's really going to help with friction. Because I also didn't know anything about like trekking socks or the right shoes or anything like that. And so I was just kind of doing it, you know, just because that's what we were doing. So they gave me moleskin and they gave me some athletic wrap that really, really helped with the friction aspect of it. And from then on in, I mean, day three was really tough too, simply because, you know, it was a lot of cobblestone and my blisters were still, you know, they're on the mend at this point.
Yeah, that's horrible, the cobblestone for blisters, because it makes your ankle and your shoe move in such unnatural directions.
Exactly.
And it really interrupts your normal gait.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and if you're carrying that amount on your back as well, that's only going to compound the feeling, isn't it?
Oh, it was incredible how, like, I just didn't realize how important it was to not do that, you know?
Mm. Well, I think the takeaway I get from that is really the importance of not carrying too much. It's not something that anyone should be complacent about. It really does ruin your Camino if you carry too much on your back. I've mentioned it before on the podcast. I've had Caminos where I've carried too much and I feel like I've had it perfect, and the difference is like night and day. It really, really is. So thanks for that, and thanks for the little tips on the blisters about putting the needle thing, putting some athletic wrap around it. Again, you know, these are things that are always going to be useful, and it's always good to relearn and remember as well, because in the end, as hikers, long distance walkers, adventurers that we are, these are things we're all going to experience. So it's always good to have it clear in our mind what exactly we should do.
Yeah. Well, and also, like, you know, when it comes to blisters, you know, it's not just friction. Like,
moisture,
it's good to have the right shoes. Have the right shoes, the right, yeah. But like, if you don't walk with very much, it doesn't leave a lot of room for your feet to get real battered up. You just have to, yeah. I mean, it's a minimalist lifestyle along the Camino.
Yeah, and less is more.
Less is definitely more. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so that was your lowest moment. Don't carry too much, and if you get some blisters, then find some Hawaiians. There you go. Or maybe just some athletic wrap and some and a pin, a sterile pin. Make sure it's sterile.
Yes, bring a lighter.
Yes, good idea. You can make it sterile just with a bit of heat. And so from the lowest to the highest, what's your highest moment on the Camino? Tell us about the moment where you felt some kind of, I've felt a sense of euphoria that I've never felt in any other moment of my life, to be honest with you, apart from my wedding day. So let's go.
Yeah.
And my team once winning a good football match, but anyway.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen often. Yeah. That's why it was so euphoric. But anyway, yeah, go on.
Yeah, no. So it was, I'd have to say it was, you know, I was just trying to look up the name of that albergue in Sions, just west of Vigo. And I have to say, you know, that was the last day that I was to walk by myself, and I had about 27 kilometers to do, and, you know, leaving out the albergue, I just felt so much, just natural energy to complete this and do it strong. It was so amazing to see how, you know, especially coming into the Camino where I believe that, you know, I was told you got to finish this, you got to do it strong.
Did you carry on with the 20 odd K on your back?
I did. I did lose a few things. You know, I got rid of a few things along the way, but there was a lot of the reason why my pack was so heavy was because it was with, you know, sentimental items that I didn't want to lose in pack services. And so I was just kind of like, you know, bearing that burden simply because I didn't want to lose it. So, yeah. So coming out of, you know, Sions and I had just 3 days of rest, and, you know, I even did, two portions of that Camino twice, right between Vigo and Sions. One of my friends, he was leaving out to fly to Morocco, and him and I walked the 9 miles from Sions to Vigo. And then there was another alternative route Once we got back to Sions and we stayed another day or two, there was an alternative route that went around Vigo, and I did that part as well. So I just like I just felt like I could do anything. I felt like the day's challenge wasn't very hard. And I haven't talked about it yet, but the arrows, they spoke to me the entire way, and like I've heard people talk about like them getting overwhelmed with the sheer magnitude of starting in France and ending in Santiago and just thinking about like how long it is. I took it one arrow at a time most days. And my goal wasn't to think about like what the end of the road was. It was to remember, just look for the next arrow. And that's really what drove me most of the time, especially.
It's a great metaphor for life, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's also a good metaphor for faith as well.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I'm not even kidding you, man. I must have taken 1,500 photos along the Camino, and 90% of those are different arrows in the way that they're positioned. And yeah, it's just, that was a real high moment for me, was realizing like not only was I going to finish, but I was going to finish like strong.
That was the moment where you knew you was over the worst part, and it was going to be kind of all downhill in terms of your feelings and emotions from there. Don't mean to say downhill. I mean, you were going to be going. Your emotions were only going to be feeling better emotionally.
Progressively from day four on, it was every day was such an excitement. Mm. Even the days walking alone, which I didn't think I would do very well.
Like a realization where you thought, actually, I can do this.
Yeah, and not only that I can do it, but I want to do this. Like the desire is getting more and more,
growing into it, kind of thing.
Yeah, that, and when we ended, I was like, oh, I don't want this to end. What is happening?
Yeah, he's definitely the worst part. He's the worst part. I don't want to go home. Don't want to go back to work. I just want to walk and be carefree and live with simplicity.
Talking to a fellow pilgrim, you understand that completely, and everybody who I know that has done it, they understand it. But you tell that to a normal person and they're like, what does that even mean? And yeah, just to have that freedom. And it is really the Camino. There are lots of through hikes all over the world. I mean, they're all over, but there is something just unique about the way of the Camino. There's something that you can't experience anywhere else.
We were talking to, I was on a Camino chat with some really, really great characters last week. And we had a lovely lady who's hospitalera at an alberg in Portugal. And her name's Tanya. I think it's Tanya Valdez. I've double checked that. But anyway, she said that it was the Camino has a magic juju. Well, I don't know how you could define a magic juju, but for me, that magic juju incorporates and includes just a charm in the towns and villages and the people you meet, and the spirit of helping your fellow man, no matter whether it's a fellow pilgrim or whether you're a local and they're trying to help the pilgrims. There is just a spirit where you feel like you are supported as you walk that route.
Oh, and absolutely.
Life is on your side. I guess you'd probably say that God is on your side.
Absolutely.
For someone that doesn't feel, I wouldn't say I don't feel comfortable saying that. I do feel comfortable saying it, but I feel like maybe I'm doing a disservice because I'm not a Christian myself. But
No.
Somebody up there like you. You get a sense that someone up there likes me, when you walk in the Camino. It's the charm, it's the charm. That's what the Camino's got in abundance. It's got unlimited charm. There's just something that charms you every step of the way, whether it's these little dogs that kind of come up and follow you along the way, or whether it's the locals that just come up and chat to you, because even though you don't speak the language, whether it's the locals the bar owners that'll introduce you to the grandma sitting in the living room just out back, whether it's the bread bags hanging on the doors for the baker to just drop the bread into. There's time has stood still on the Camino. Time hasn't kept up with modern life. Like, and thank God.
Especially these smaller places, smaller villages, smaller towns. And so South America was full of siestas, and I love that followed over into Portugal and Spain in certain regards.
Yeah.
And you get into these smaller towns. Like I was coming into Mogas, I think it's the name of the little coastal town. And it was on this major holiday, and like we showed up, everything was closed. I didn't even I had no idea about the holiday. I was walking along the way and I'm like, I'm not seeing anybody. I'm like, there's no cars out. Like it was kind of eerie. And we, I get into the albergue, waiting for the rest of my team that had been walking with me that day to show up. And I was like, wow, there's nobody out. Like, what's going on? And he's like, yeah, it's like a national holiday. And there was no grocery stores open that day either. So it's like, I didn't have any food or anything like that. And what I loved about what happened was, as soon as everybody had gotten there for the day, the owner of the albergue took it upon himself to go with him and his wife, and they went and they made us a whole really awesome meal, like a quiche, I don't know what they would call that in Spain, but it was just like an egg. Here in America, we might mix bread with eggs and spinach and tomatoes and stuff like that. And they brought that over for us. They brought over some cheese, some grapes, and different types of meats like pastrami and salami. And it was just we all sat down, together, and it was just such an amazing experience to see like complete strangers around the table together. Not acting like strangers, not acting like we don't know each other, but how wine is on the Camino, and just sitting around with a glass or two of wine and just really, kind of being who you are, and people not judging you on that.
No, it's that charm. It's where people just go above and beyond the extra mile to make you feel comfortable, even though they don't know you, even though they might not ever see you again. This is totally unconditional because it is the spirit of the Camino. And a similar experience, my wife and I, we were in Valencia, which is on the border with on the inland route. And the albergues were closed because it was December. So in the end, we went to this place called Casa del Poco, which was this like a stately home, but we had this really nice room in this kind of stately home that had been converted into like a B&B kind of thing. Anyway, they were offering us breakfast. We didn't want breakfast because we were going to leave early. They said breakfast. I can't remember what the time was, but we were going to leave before the breakfast time. We wanted to hit the road. Anyway, they were waiting for us to wave us off in the morning and gave us a bag of fruit and some takeaway coffee to eat along the way as well. I mean, they didn't have to do that, and they got up to wave us off. You can't help but just be enchanted by that.
Well, it's addictive. It's like, and it's also a good example. Taking back some of the virtues of the Camino back to your home life is really special too. Just because you get to share with some of that with other people that might never actually experience what the Camino can provide. There was a day we were walking in Portugal and it was just pouring down rain. And I'm like, I was fully rain geared out, poncho on, just got my headphones in. And I had waterproof shoes, but it got into it started going, soaking through my pants and into the top of my shoe. And so I'm walking down and I'm like, okay, what's happening? So I look over down the road a little bit and there's this overhang over this garage that just is dry and it's free. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to stop there. I'm just going to stop there. And I did. I was by myself and my friends were, a little ways behind me, about 5 minutes walk behind me. And I just went and stood there and I just wanted to wait for them, get out of the rain. Well, lo and behold, there's this guy burning brush in the pouring down rain across the street. Well, the overhang, the garage that I was standing next to, that was his property. And what he did was he stopped what he was doing immediately, He walked over to me. He, of course, I didn't speak Portuguese, so he just kind of beckoned me into underneath in his porch, and he went and got his wife. His wife made us, as soon as my friend showed up, that she made us coffee. She brought out cake for us, and they just let us stay there and sit and wait till it was done raining, and complete strangers, like just. I just wanted to stand under the overhang. I wasn't looking for anything else. But yet that was the experience of it. And it was just really beautiful. I had the guy that was with me, he's fluent in Spanish, English, and he's partial fluent in French, as well as he knows a little bit of Portuguese.
He'll get by in Portuguese with that, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. At one point, he I think in one sentence, and she was really surprised by this, in one sentence he spoke a little bit of French, Spanish, and Portuguese, which was very funny. So it was just an interesting experience to see. Like, I come from – in America, I don't know how much time you've spent over here, but we have a culture of busyness. We have – you know, we keep our nose to the grindstone. We don't make room for strangers. In fact, we avoid them. And it's just so beautiful to see the inviting nature of people that you know, okay, like I'm not used to that, and mm-hmm. and for them to just fully open up, you know, what felt like their home, coffee, and just good company for an hour was just amazing.
I really like how the direction of this podcast. I really like the direction this podcast interview is taking, because I normally have a set of questions that I like to ask, because I think this draws the information out of our guests that people that are listening need to hear, to plan, to prepare, to make sure that they can get the best out of their Camino. But I feel like this is doing this as well, because we are preparing the listeners for what they can expect and the attitude that they should take onto the Camino with them. That is to be open. That is to drop your guard. That is to look for the magic in these encounters with the locals. And that we need to leave behind the person that maybe we are at home. And that person, like you say, is the busy person. Because a busy pilgrim might not end up being a satisfied pilgrim.
Oh, so. Absolutely. And that's why, you know, it really should have only taken 10 days to do what we did. But, you know, I told myself going on, you know, I'm not going to rush through this because so we had about a month to do it. And a lot of people on our squad, they rushed through and they went and, you know, and I'm not saying rush through in a bad way, but they had, you know, some were going to Israel, some were going to Ireland, and, you know, it's just so cheap to fly in Europe. So they were capitalizing on it. But I just told myself that I'm not going to rush through this. I'm going to really press into it and see what the Lord has to offer throughout the entire way. And it was such a profound experience. And like, yeah, I read through all your questions. And yeah, I'd agree that, you know, just I think the attitude is the most important part that we carry on the Camino, especially for someone, because listen, you know, everybody's not always they're not always open about what they're going through. A lot of people that are doing the Camino are doing it for, you know, they might be hurting. They might be going through something that they just needed space away, time away. They might have lost somebody. They might have just went through. I ran across the guy that had just went through a divorce, and he, you know, he was from Germany, and you know, it was just being able to connect with people on a personal level, and maybe bring some comfort to their life. You know, maybe just, you know, bring a break and a reprieve from some of the challenges that they face on an everyday. And that see. The people are what make up the Camino and the atmosphere of the Camino. Otherwise, it's just a beautiful hike. And don't get me wrong, I think there's an essence about it that caused people to open up like that, that bring that camaraderie that I've heard about and seen and personally went through. So, yeah, just really being, God, it was such a humbling experience for me. If you were actively a part of my everyday life, you would realize like I think about the Camino and I talk about the Camino with a lot of people, and there's so many really great lessons that I learned along the way that I took back and I applied here.
That's really interesting life. Because my next question, and I was just loading it up there, ready to launch into it. What was the biggest, most important lesson you took from the Camino back to your life back home?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say that for me personally, it was just about the perseverance aspect. I had spent most of my life believing that I didn't feel like I had the capacity to complete things, difficult things. Like even last year, I wanted to go home so many times in Africa in the 4 months we were there. You know, I had thought about buying plane tickets. I had, you know, even looked up plane tickets. I was in a low spot, and coming on the Camino, I was worried that I was going to get into a hard spot and not finish, you know, take that taxi to Santiago or something like that. But that's not what happened. You know, what happened was a drive that I had never experienced before, and a motivation for me that drove me to not only complete it, but complete it strong. And so taking it home and applying that same mindset of,
can you give a specific example of how you've used that new drive and resilience that you found in your life back home? A specific example.
My relationships with people.
Okay.
So that's, you know, some of the hardest things in my life are interpersonal skills, so to speak. And so I've really, really applied a lot of that in my relationships with people. And when things get difficult, rather than just, you know, dropping it, but really press in. And, you know, a lot of the virtues that I desire, like humility and meekness and, you know, just pursuing people. I really applied that back home. You know, we were in Santiago doing a debrief, our final debrief. And I'm going to say a quick story, about a minute or so.
Yeah, go.
So I was told this story in Romania when I was like emotionally exhausted, physically exhausted, didn't know what I was going to do. Someone came up to me and she told me a story, and she's like, there was this man that climbed a mountain, and he showed up the day before to climb this mountain. He showed up to this bar at the base of it, and he was so excited. He was like, yes, let's do it. Let's do it. And he walked into the bar, and the guy sitting at the bar, he asked the guy, hey, did you climb that mountain? And he he's like, yep. And he said, he asked, well, how was it? And the guy said, it was okay. And well, he shrugged it off. And then the next day he started his ascent up, and about 2/3 of the way up, he gets super exhausted, and he loses sight of why he chose to do that. And he gets to the top of the mountain so physically exhausted that all he could do was take a picture and then head back down. Well, this guy heads back down. He goes into the same bar, and he sits down at the bar, orders a drink. And then lo and behold, somebody else comes in all excited and ready to go, asks the same two questions. Did you climb that mountain? He said, yes. He said, how was it? And he said the same thing. It was okay. But the moral of that is that, like, we're not to lose sight so much of like why we're doing everything, like why we're doing the Camino, or, you know, just walking 500 miles. What is the, not to lose sight of that and then get to the end and really lose the real purpose. You know, I wear a bracelet. Excuse me if my Spanish isn't perfect, but it says El Camino es la meta. I think that's how, es la meta. But the translation is just the journey is the reward. And, you know, that was the whole point of the Camino, you know, just, that's why getting into Santiago is often a point of sadness rather than, you know, it's like, oh, you know, I'm sure some people finish and like, yeah, thank God it's over. But, you know, for me, it was like, it's over, you know.
What next? That's often the big question you get in that scenario. So we're in Santiago then. We're in Santiago, which brings us neatly to what I have christened in recent podcasts, a lap of honor round. So we do have an opportunity with that question, what next, to go on to finish there, which is another 3 days. I would highly recommend it. I loved my 3-day walk to Finisterre. And there's also an option to go to Muxia, which many people say that's M-U-X IA, which many people say is one of the most beautiful towns on the Camino, sitting right on the coast, not the fanfare of Santiago or the fanfare of Finisterre, but actually a place to reflect on a journey in a beautiful place. So in our Lap of Honour round, we ask lots of short, sharp, quick questions, and you can fire short, sharp, quick answers if that's okay.
Perfect.
Right, let's do it. So, one thing you wished you'd packed?
Definitely some of the athletic tape and moleskin to put on my feet.
One thing you didn't need, I guess there's quite a few, and wouldn't take again.
Yeah, 5 pounds of coins, a sleeping pad, sleeping bag, probably my pillow.
Right, okay. One guilty pleasure you carried with you. There was many, I guess, but...
Yeah, one guilty. They always had wine. I carried that with me a lot of times.
It's not a guilty pleasure. Mm. That's a necessity.
And that sleeping bag liners, that was a big thing for me. Okay. So.
If you don't know these, just say pass. Okay. So if there's not applicable to your journey, just say pass. Favorite Camino blog, book, or film?
Well, I hear everybody saying The Way, and unfortunately, I actually watched half of it with my buddy who I did the Camino with. So, I'd say The Way was a really inspiring.
Social media personality or account worth following?
I don't have that.
No problem. Favorite food and or drink on the Camino?
Food and drink. I did a lot of pasta, a lot of eggs. We lived very cheaply. We had a budget, so I did a lot of eggs and pasta and wine.
You can get that very, very, very cheap on the Camino in the supermarkets.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
You could quite easily get by on 30 euros a day on the Camino.
Oh, we did less than that.
Even less. I think that's comfortable, actually. That's living comfortable. So, weirdest thing you saw someone carrying on the Camino? Apart from your own backpack, which was full of weird things.
It was full of weird things. Yeah, honestly, no, I was probably the weirdest guy on the entire route at that time for like weird things. So I'd say probably nobody weirder than what I was carrying.
Weird is wonderful after all, Joseph. So don't worry about that. A hidden gem. Yeah. So a hidden gem on the Camino, a town that surprised you that you didn't know much about.
Oh yeah, like I believe it's pronounced Coreca. It's before Spain, and it is a real small town. And we just had, by sheer happenstance, that was the day that John hurt his heel, and we just stopped there. And it was such a beautiful little like a little hostel. I actually have a really funny story, but we can get back to that. What's the next?
That's Careco.
I believe, yes, I can get the exact spelling real quick.
Careso or Careco. Okay, yeah, that's in Portugal. And the C's got the little, I don't know what the symbol is called.
That's it. Yep,
it's got the little C underneath, the little hook underneath it.
Careco. Yep.
What was my next question while I was looking at that place? Okay, so one thing you'll do differently when you return to the Camino, apart from pack less?
I would say... invite other people's, you know, the Camino is very personal. So not forcing any portion of my Camino onto somebody else, and letting them do it at their own pace, however they want to. I'm not saying that was a problem, but, you know, just really the Camino is very personal to the individuals, especially those who do it multiple times.
Okay, you have to give one piece of advice to a pilgrim that is preparing to walk the Camino. What is that going to be?
Yeah, make it your own. I really like the idea of the Camino. So just to really think about like why you're being drawn to do something like this, and just, you know, don't focus on, you know, it's really walking 500 miles is great. You know, doing all that's great. I did a really short route and I just benefited so much from it. So like, what are you hoping to take from this? And also just live freely. You know, it's just an opportunity not to have to worry about a bunch of stuff and carry a bunch of extra baggage. So just live freely, be yourself, and be inviting, you know, let people come into your life. If people might speak in to your situation, and you might find healing from some of that, or if that's something that you're wanting or going through.
See, I was thinking about this as well, to add to that, and that is, I had a reflection when I was having my cold shower a couple of days ago, and that was that I love music, and music's a big part of my life. So in recent times, this is relevant, by the way. So in recent times, most of us listen to music on our phones, or we'll stick it on a Bluetooth speaker or whatever. But I thought, you know what? I need to listen to music the way I used to listen to music. And that is stick some earphones on and just have it, like feeling every single part of a song. And you notice things you didn't notice before when you put in your earphones in a song. You might notice a bass line. You might notice some little crash on the snare. Crash on the cymbal. You might notice something panning in the ears from left to right. You know, you hear the magic of production. Turn that on its head. When you walk the Camino without your phone on, with your phone switched off, or without listening to music, you tune into all of Camino's magic as well. You hear things you wouldn't normally hear by turning off your phone. You know, you'll tune into the beauty of the Camino. You'll tune into everything. You'll hear all the intricacies. You'll hear all the magic. So that's why I think my advice to someone would be, turn your phone off, even if just for a day. Try it. And I know I've said this before, but I couldn't really back it up with a reason. And I just had this analogy in my head that listen to the magic of music, actually, with some earphones in. You can hear everything that's beautiful about it. And it's the same about the Camino. Turn your devices off and you'll get the best out of it. Just try it for one day. I want to hear about that funny story that you were going to... Let's finish on that funny story in Careso.
So we had spent a whole day, you know, walking. It was raining again, as usual. And, I'm rushing to get to this albergue. And so I saw the entrance to it. And I was like, okay, so behind the gate, there was a building. I'm like, so the whole building's got to be it. So what I do is I quickly walk in, and instead of going down, I go up the stairs and I go into the first door on the right. And I'm like, what? There's just a printer. There's a desk with a cup of coffee. And I'm like, okay, what's going on? And then this dog just comes out of nowhere and just runs out the front door. And I'm like, what is happening? Is this the right place? And the dog, by the way, didn't stop by leaving. He ran out the front gate too, and he started running down part of the Camino. And this old lady comes out of nowhere. She's like, "Who are you?" Just, you know, yelling at me in Spanish, something in Spanish. She was not happy. And the operator, the albergue, comes rushing out of the bottom, and she's like, "Do you want to stay here or not?" And I'm like, "What do you mean?" And she's like, "That's somebody's house that I just walked into and let her dog out." It was just such a bizarre experience to be like, "Well, I didn't mean," and the dog's gone.
Right. So you're now living in Atlanta, Georgia. What would happen if you walked into somebody's house in Atlanta, Georgia?
Yeah, you're liable to get shot. When I live in the South, where everybody has guns, and I let her dog out of all things. That was probably like her best friend, and that was probably one of the funnier experiences.
I'm surprised they didn't invite you in for coffee and tea and meet the grandparents, grandchildren, and have a photo to get framed on the mantelpiece.
I was just lucky. I was just lucky not to get barred from sleeping there, because the owner of the albergue was not happy.
Joseph. I'd like you to tell me which Camino you're going to do next. Is it definitely going to be the Norte?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. We've already got me and John, the guy I did the Camino with throughout. Him and I are already planning. We've started gear shopping and we're hoping to do it in. I'm really hoping this COVID doesn't prevent us from doing it next September, October. We're going to take 60 days to do.
Beautiful.
We're going to take just 60 days to do it. And that's more, that's almost double what we need, I think, but just really just slowing down and it's not a rush. It's not a race. It's, it's some of the, you look back and you'll think about these experiences all your life.
Okay, so to finish, we always like our guests to recommend a Camino song, one that reminds them of their Camino, or one that gets them in the mood for walking the Camino or going for a hike to relive the experience. Is there a song you can recommend we listen to?
Yeah, so I did a lot of Christian music, go figure. But mine would be Be Enthroned by Bethel Music and Jeremy Riddle. I'm not going to sing it to you, but I would encourage all you Christian pilgrims. That is something that really helped me. It was the first thing I listened to every day. So,
well, you traveled 17 countries last year. You went through 4 continents. You dug out of yourself things you thought you could never do. Are you sure you can't extend that to singing?
Yeah, I'm definitely absolutely 100%
positive. Just wanted to check.
Yep, nope. Everybody always asks me who sings that song. And then when I answer, they're like, let's keep it that way.
Good stuff. Joseph, thanks for getting in touch and volunteering to do this interview. Thanks for sharing all your stories. Thanks for your great tips. Thanks for being supremely honest about your packing strategy or lack of, shall we say. And I'm sure that experience will serve you well for doing the Norte next autumn. And thanks for giving us the angle of a religious pilgrim. Like I say, I find that very interesting myself as someone who's still looking for that calling. And I really admire and envy your faith and devotion and discipline to that. Mm-hmm. And I hope that some Christian pilgrims that may be listening may have got something from that as well. And even those that aren't Christians that, you know, maybe could feel that they can get something out of the pilgrimage approaching it that way. I loved going into churches with my wife. She always wanted to go into the churches. I love lighting a candle and just sitting for a moment and feeling the peaceful environs. I feel like there's a higher vibration in a church, you know, than
that. Did you do the Pilgrim's Mass?
In Santiago. Our timetable never coincided with the Pilgrim's Mass, sadly. So
I would encourage it next time you do a Camino.
Yeah, I'd really like to do that.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on. Thank you so much. It was seriously, like, I listen to your podcast a lot, and it always drives me to continue planning and keep the hope alive.
Well, that is the aim, is just to keep people's Camino dreams alive, because I know that it's a big challenge to do so with so many borders closed and the future's uncertain. So mission accomplished, if that's the case. So thanks for that.
No problem.
Thanks, Joseph. Have a great next Camino. I wish you, we're in November, but is it too early to say Happy Christmas? I don't know.
So. It is not. No, we've already started everything.
Happy Thanksgiving, actually. This is Thanksgiving.
Yes, it's tomorrow.
Yep, happy Thanksgiving. Tomorrow. Happy Christmas. And buen camino.
All right. Thank you so much.
Cheers. Thanks a lot, Joseph.
Oh, yeah. So I didn't mention, though, Buen Camino is the app that I used. And I have not heard that spoken of on your podcast. Maybe it has, but that is just like a guidebook. So it's free, and it's also donation-based. So Buen Camino, it's very, very good. It has all the routes.